Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the left side. This is the right side.
Welcome back to Pretty Good Vibrations, the podcast that both analyzes and celebrates pop and rock music and the central role that it plays in our lives. Certainly in my life, certainly in my guest's life today. In a minute, we'll be hearing from Ethan Luck, dear old friend of mine. Today, we're doing one of these Wish I Wrote That episodes, which is a new kind of shorter episode type that I'm doing. I'm kind of playing around. I'm iterating, trying out different ways to talk about the music that I love and think about it, ask people about it. And this is one. So we're talking today about Face to Face. The song is called You Could Have Had Everything. It's not as popular of a Face to Face song, but it's one that's very important to me. Face to Face, Southern California Inland Empire band. This is from their album Reactionary, released in the year 2000. And Reactionary was a return to their kind of straightforward, hook-laden, emotionally resonant punk rock that they'd been known for. Up until their previous record, Ignorance is Bliss, which veered pretty strongly into slower, moodier, more emo territory, much to the chagrin of the majority of their fan base. But with some hindsight, Ignorance is Bliss now has a kind of cult status for Face to Face fans. And a few of my all-time favorite songs by Face to Face are on that record. For instance, let's hear a little clip of the song Prodigal. Are you kidding me? Did they take this album off of Spotify because they are so embarrassed by it? You know what? I was going to wait a second, but Ethan, just hop on here, man. Hey, welcome. Do you know about this?
I was about to look on my phone and see if it's on Apple Music, but
wow.
If it's not on there, I don't think it has anything to do with Trevor and the guys. I think they like that record still. Hearing you even mention that record, I could sit down and talk about Ignorance is Bliss for 2 hours, no problem.
I love that record.
But it's a fantastic
And I'm
going to
explain why. I actually like that record more than Reactionary, but the sort of, this is pretty unprofessional here. But
you could
the
edit
reason
that out.
I wanted to hear, the reason I want to do
Dude,
the Reactionary track
Music,
is because
by the way.
Shit. Well, I'm not going to, you know, go, listener, if you want to hear an emo version of Face to Face, go pull up Prodigal or Burden or name a couple of the songs off that record you like, Ethan.
Everybody Hates a Know-It-All. Come on.
Everyone Hates a Know-It-All. Yeah.
Just for fun, I'm looking on, I don't have Spotify, but I have like the free version. Yeah, it's not on Spotify. Yeah. I don't know why. That's really weird.
Well, that's fine. Those songs will get some play somewhere along the line on this show, I'm sure. The point is, really off to a great start here. The point is that that's got some cult status, but at the time it was very controversial and they almost immediately went back to basics. And this album, Reactionary, was when they went back to basics. And actually, do you remember this, Ethan? They utilized mp3.com to have fans vote on what would make the record of all these songs they recorded.
That was
Did you participate in that vote? I voted. I was an mp3.com power user at that point in my life.
A power user?
I think
I was an mp3.com user. I did not participate in the vote, unfortunately. But listen, Reactionary, that's actually one of my, that's probably in my top four face-to-face records, I would say.
It's a good record.
It's a really good record. Like, if you're going to return to form after a record that your fans, you know, the majority of them hated, and you're going to return to form, my God, did they come out swinging for sure. And you know, I've watched, like, you know, the old face-to-face documentary, which I think you can find on YouTube now, and they go into all that, you know, and they talk about Ignorance is Bliss and how their fans hated it and how they, you know, were going back to their old sound and stuff like that. But I think it definitely left a bit of a dent, you know, at the time, not maybe now, in the grand scheme of things. I think now people have probably come around to that record, Ignorance is Bliss. But man, Reactionary is no joke. That, and you know, and Pete Parada's first record on, like, a punk sounding record. Obviously his first record was Ignorance is Bliss, but Pete Prada on drums, man, it's like, oh, that dude can play so fast, and that dude is, like, no joke on the drums.
Well, that's okay. So that's kind of a good segue into why I did want to talk about this record. So the whole conceit for this idea of these Wish I Wrote That episodes is I'm trying to weave in a little bit of autobiography with a little bit of what we normally do on the show anyway, which is, like, listening and talking about music that we love. The autobiography is about the fact that when I turned 14 or 15, I started writing songs. And there's a certain way you can think about songs when you are also trying to write them that is different than the way you think about them when you are merely a listener. And there are many, many songs. Most songs I've ever loved have not intersected in a special way in that moment with the music I was trying to write in that moment.
Right.
These episodes are about songs that have intersected in that way. And I'm just thinking that's, like, perhaps one additional lens that might bring out some cool conversation and stuff like that, some stuff that might show up. But let's do a little bit of face-to-face intro. So if you've only ever heard one song by face-to-face, it is probably this one. And this is the version that was played on the radio where I lived. So I'm guessing it's this version. This is a song called Disconnected. It's been on multiple face-to-face albums. If you've only heard one thing, it's probably this. Okay, so that's our introduction to Face to Face. Let's do an introduction to our guest here, 8 minutes in.
Oh,
Ethan,
Lord.
You have been in so many bands. Here's the list that I know of, and you tell me if I'm missing any. And this is more or less chronological order. The Dingies, the OC Supertones, Project 86, Demon Hunter, Reliant K. Are there more bands that you've been a member of than those?
I mean, yeah, but like small little things.
Smaller,
like,
ones,
nobody...
okay. And you've
all the main ones.
Those are the main ones. And you also have, like, a distinguished career as a touring member of many bands. Give us that list, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what I do now. By the way, I do want to clarify the Project 86 thing. Yes, I basically helped start that band with Andrew. And then after about a year, I was out. It was before they got signed. I think my last show was the first show Brand Neeble saw the band at Tom Fest, if you remember that, up in
I
Scott
do remember
Mania.
Tom Fest, yeah.
And then, I just, it just wasn't enjoyable to be in that band. So I didn't
did Randy take over for you on guitar, or was Randy joining?
No,
separate?
I actually played bass.
Oh, you're a bass on project. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I played, and then Stephen Dale came in after me, and he was the better fit, obviously. But, but anyways, yeah, I mean, basically, the last band I was an actual member of was Reliant K. And I did do like this little reunion tour thing, almost 2 years ago now. And I played bass of all things, which is really funny because I was the drummer in the band.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the last band I was.
You're
like
the drummer on
of.
My favorite album, Forget and Not Slow Down.
I appreciate that. Like I said, last band I was a member of. And ever since then, I've basically just been like a touring musician, or what people call like a utility musician, where I'll play multiple instruments with an artist. I've been more in the country world now, which is kind of funny, you know, coming from like, you know, playing in like ska and punk rock bands and whatever. Yeah. And then now I'm, you know, in the country world. So I played with an artist named Morgan Wade. I played a few shows with this girl named Haley Witters last September, which was really fun. I did auxiliary for Kings of Leon. I'm not sure if you've heard of that band, up and coming kind of
yes,
rock
yes.
band.
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
I got asked to do a tour with that band Need to Breathe, in 2019, mm-hmm. like an acoustic kind of theater tour, which was a blast.
Sweet.
I never met those dudes before that. Really nice dudes. And me and Josh, their keys guy, really hit it off. We're both vinyl nerds. So pretty much every day we spent at record stores before and after sound checks. but yeah, that's basically, I do that. And then, you know, I do session work here in Nashville and sometimes here at my home studio, which is a garage. Behind
that garage,
white, those white doors is a washer and dryer.
I love it. Okay, so the reason that I asked you to come on, besides just obviously we could talk about any kind of music ad nauseum for any amount of time, yeah. is that you were in the Los Angeles, Orange County area, you know, the Dingies years overlap with Face to Face, the Supertones years down there overlap with Face to Face.
Yeah.
The first question I want us each to answer is what we were doing in the year 2000. And I'll go first since I didn't give you much time to think about it. So in the year 2000, yeah, there we go. I was only 6 to 7 hours north by car of yeah. this scene, this SoCal punk scene. I was up in San Jose, California. This was my junior and senior year of high school. I was absolutely neck deep in what I would call hooky punk rock. My 1993 Ford Explorer's back window was decked out in band stickers. The ones I can remember are NoFX, MXPX, Bad Religion, Strung Out, Face to Face, No Use for a Name, Rancid, Operation Ivy, and eventually Sunny Day Real Estate made it on there to kind of like be like, yeah, but I got a little bit of an arty side to me, guys. I did see Face to Face. It might have been on the Reactionary Tour at the Cactus Club in San Jose with Saves the Day and Sum 41 opening up.
Whoa.
And as I said, I was already a big Face to Face fan. Kind of the one that really landed for me was the fourth record, the self-titled, which I think was the second on a major label. And that one sort of blew the doors open for me. And as a result, I was in the MP3.com Face to Face fan community and contributed my little votes to which songs would make this record a Reactionary.
What was your MP3.com status called again? Master MP3er or something? You mentioned
it
earlier.
I was a power user.
There it is.
Because I was absolutely fucking, you know, ravenous for new music. I mean, yeah. That's the real difference between then and now in terms of access is, you know, it was hard. It was hard to find stuff. It was hard to get it. You had to save your money and buy a physical CD. I mean, it was just such a different process. What were you doing in 2000? You were down in SoCal.
I was in Orange County, California. I originally am from Long Beach, California. And then when I was probably, 11, we moved down to Orange County. And I was kind of immersed. I didn't know it at the time. And maybe, you know, looking back, like I should have known better, but I didn't quite understand like the mecca of music I was in geographically, you know, with LA being just north, San Diego being just south, I was right in the middle. And, you know, and then you have like Riverside, Inland Empire area. And I was going to do a little, you mentioned the Inland Empire. It's probably still considered that, but where Face to Face is from is considered the high desert. Victorville,
okay.
California.
I looked it up because I was like, where's Victorville? And then I was like, I think that's Inland Empire. And I Googled it and it looked to me like most of Inland Empire goes much further in. But yeah. It did appear to be it's maybe a fringe case there.
It's kind of like when you're on the edge of like Riverside and stuff, and then it's just nothing, and then you get to like Victorville further east.
Oh,
but
I see. So it's further.
But yeah, like
there.
Like Trevor Keith, who's a friend of mine actually, so I'm stoked to even more stoked to do this song. He lives out here,
yeah, singer
as well.
And writer, yeah.
Yep. Primary writer. Yeah. He'll refer to Victorville as the High Desert.
It's,
but either
obviously
way.
It's way more poetic to say high desert. I mean, I'd prefer it. For
I'm
sure.
From the high desert. anyway, so yeah, being in the middle of Orange County, it was crazy cool to be in high school when a lot of this stuff was happening, like, you know, No Doubt getting more popular and, you know, bands, you know, and obviously there was a huge ska scene in Southern
right.
California at the time.
Right.
You know, Real Big Fish, Save Ferris, Aquabats, all those bands. Then you had like Blink 182 down south and bands up in LA like Bad Religion and stuff like that. And then, you know, we had our Orange County bands like Social Distortion and No Doubt, like I said. So it was cool to be in the middle of all that. And I think when I was that age, like junior high and high school, I graduated high school in 96. And I just thought this is what it's like everywhere. You know, I hadn't really traveled much other than going on vacation with my family, you know, and the one place that I did go when I was pretty young was New York. So something even bigger and more of a monstrosity than
right.
even LA. So, I just thought this is how every town is. Everyone's got just bands everywhere. And then
no,
I think
you're
once
like a child who was born at Willy Wonka's chocolate factory and didn't
exactly.
know. You're like, doesn't everybody have access to a chocolate river?
Exactly.
Just Mecca.
But that was a great thing growing up, and the older I got, and once I started touring, I realized like, oh, we've got it good, you know,
right.
out in Southern California, and just being in close proximity to like, you know, if something cool is happening up in the Bay Area, it's like, you know, in less than, you know, 7 hours you can get up there, or
totally.
Phoenix was 4.5-5 hours away, Vegas, stuff like that. But yeah, in Face to Face was one of those bands that. I don't know how, but they kind of flew under my radar until the self-titled record, you know, with like Don't Turn Away and Big Choice. But I remember hearing Disconnected on K-Rock.
And that's what I was going to say. I must have been introduced to them. That's kind of my second question is, how did you get into Face to Face? And I know it would have been Disconnected on Live 105 or 98.5, you know, the rock stations in the South Bay Area. But the first album I really got into was that self-titled.
Yeah, that same for me. And here in Disconnected, it would either be on K-Rock or where we lived in kind of South Orange County. I could sometimes pick up the San Diego station 91X and I would hear it on there too. And but even then, I still like I loved the song and I don't think I realized they were a California band until my friend Zach. I don't know if you remember Zach Schultz. He was in that band Stairwell. And in the mid-ish 90s, him and I worked, it was just like right before I started touring, him and I worked at like an after-school daycare. And we were like the cool leaders at the daycare because I had, you know, at the time, had a few tattoos and you weren't supposed to. My boss didn't care. It was so dumb.
Yeah, dude.
But Zach and I a lot of times would carpool together to work and kind of trade off what CDs we were putting in the CD player in the car. And he put in the self-titled record and I was like, this sounds familiar. He goes, you know, the song Disconnected? This is Face to Face. It's like, this is their latest, at the time, their latest record.
Yeah.
And then I just got obsessed with that record, that self-titled record. Just, I mean, every song is just so good. I don't think there's one track skipper on there.
It's super solid. Yeah.
It really is. And then shortly after that, I think in probably 98 or 99, myself and Zach, we got tickets to see Face to Face up at, I can't remember what it was originally called. It's the Avalon in LA, or maybe that was the old name, either way. Yeah. We went up there and it was Face to Face headlining. Direct support was Jimmy World. So around the, Clarity era, and we got typical Orange County in LA. We got stuck in a shit ton of traffic and we got there for like two songs of Jimmy World. And we were like pretty new Jimmy World fans at the time. So we were pretty bummed. And then the opener we totally missed, but that, I think it was No Knife who opened that show. But Face to Face, it was like them live and not just like, oh, back in the 90s, they were like this. Like I've seen them way later in the last 10 years, and they're still just as good live. And it was a swift like lesson in how to structure a set list and what not to say in between songs, because they, like, Trevor hardly spoke. Every once in a while he would say a couple things, but it was like the first like seven songs, you'd end a song like da 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 da, 1, 2, 3, 4, but right into the next one, just like no time in between songs.
Yeah.
And just so blown away. So then, you know, around that time, Ignorance is Bliss comes out. I fell in love with that record because, like you, I was getting into like Sunny Day Real Estate, Jimmy Eat World, Mineral, you know, what we considered emo back then. Now emo is basically everything under the pop punk umbrella, and it could be a screamo band.
Yeah,
it's emo.
The earlier emo was distinct enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's back when people would describe it as emotional music.
Yeah.
That's why they call it emo.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, get up to 2000 and, it's like, wait, they're already putting out another record. And I remember seeing it at like Tower Records or something in El Toro, California. And just, I'm like, well, yeah, I'm going to buy that, you know? And I had no idea they were going back to like a punk rock sound. Right. I was obsessed with Ignorance is Bliss. I thought it was such a great record. That's so many creative, cool guitar parts and melodies and lyrics. And I, for one, really like when bands evolve, as long as it's still good. You know, it's like some bands try something new and you're like, whoa. At first it takes you by surprise. It's stylistically, it's different. But then all of a sudden you're like, well, these songs are great. The lyrics are great. The melodies are great. The arrangements are great. The production's great, whatever. The whole package is there. So you're like, well, shit, this is awesome. I'm gonna follow along this ride. And so I didn't know they were going back. I was expecting like, what's the follow-up to Ignorance is Bliss going to be? And then I just picked up Reactionary and I was like, oh, it's right back to where they left off before that record. And I loved it just as much. I thought it was such a good record. The songwriting was great. I've told Trevor, I'm like, this is one of my favorite Face-to-Face records, you know, because they don't play a ton of these songs live. Every once in a while they will. But yeah,
it's not as big on their Spotify plays and stuff like that. It seems to have a little bit fallen through the cracks. And that is surprising because it just sounds like right up their alley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a return to form, and like you were saying, like they succeeded, you know, and yet like a bunch of stuff since then is like more popular among their fan base. And, you know, it's hard to know how that stuff, you know, comes to pass. And, you know, it's different stories for different bands.
Right.
Let's get into the song a little bit. So this song is called You Could Have Had Everything. It is the seventh most popular song on this album, which is a unpopular album. So this is, you know, in my opinion, kind of an underknown gem kind of a thing. I'm going to start by playing it from the start. This song is 2 minutes and 15 seconds. This is part of the thing. One of the things I love about it it's just no nonsense. Get straight into it. And later I'll talk about kind of my favorite part, but let's get a little bit of context here for You Could Have Had Everything by Face-to-Face, the song we are focusing on here today.
Let's go.
Ignorance and arrogance be quite the same to me. Take a look around you and I'm sure you will agree. The world is full of people filled with hatred, filled with greed. Such a rare example when you found a human being. You could have had everything but you. You'd have been scared of what to do.
Okay, I want to start there. We are at the 28-second mark when that chorus ends and the second verse begins. That is my love language right there.
It really is. And I know how much you like, you know, even like pop formula or whatever, that made me think of when you mentioned the 28 seconds.
Yeah.
There's a popular term. I don't know if it was originally just a Nashville term or just a songwriter term, but don't bore us, get to the chorus, right?
Oh yeah. I associate that with Tom Petty. Like he would always say that. I don't know if he's the only one who came up with it or what, but yeah.
But this is a masterclass in getting to the chorus fast.
Yeah.
Like
15 seconds.
I don't think people can even figure out why they're bored before that chorus hits.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. There's no time to be bored. Yeah.
No, not at all.
You couldn't even get to where you wanted to get to that chorus because you were bored.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I love about it is like it's fast, it's catchy. And in the year 2000, you know, to kind of contextualize it with where I was when it came out, that's what I wanted. And this was also like the music that I was trying to write exactly. At this point, I was in my second high school punk band. The first one was called Permanent Holiday. I was the drummer and I got kicked out for being lazy and not helping enough with loadout at shows, which every time I've told that story, my former Sherwood bandmates would get a nice snicker. this time I was the lead vocalist, a guitar player, and the songwriter. And we were called Ignorant Youth. And although recordings exist somewhere, we will not be hearing them.
Well, that's a shame.
It's not worth it. But Face to Face, you know, they've always written pretty straightforward songs. They're not too complicated other than Scott Shiflett's bass lines, which, by the way, case people don't know, brother of Chris Shiflett from Foo Fighters. Very nice guy. Have you gotten to know Scott at all, through knowing Trevor and the other guys?
What's funny is I met Scott before Trevor, so when Trevor first moved to Nashville, I'm going to get this wrong, but probably around 2011, 12 maybe.
Okay.
I was in Japan with Reliant K. We were doing the Punk Spring Festival and Face to Face was on it. And somebody had told me, I don't remember who, someone told me that Trevor moved to Nashville. So I thought when I was there, I'm like, oh, I should say hello and just introduce myself and maybe he wants to grab a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah.
And at this point, obviously I've been a professional touring musician for years.
Yeah, it's like not weird
point.
For you to ask him.
No,
like,
no, this isn't like, ignorance is bliss rules. You know, it wasn't like one of those, Chris Farley to Paul McCartney sketches.
You remember that time you wrote Ignorance is Bliss?
Yeah, you remember Big Choice? Anyway, so I remember doing some interviews or something, and I'm leaving those, going back to the dressing room area, and out of another room comes Scott Shiflett. And so we kind of make eye contact. I was like, hey, what's up, man? Great set today or whatever, last night, because there was three shows. And so we just start talking as we're walking, and I said, oh, I'm Ethan, I'm playing Reliant K and blah, blah, blah. And I don't think you know this fact. You mentioned one of my early bands, The Dingies. So the one record I played on called Armageddon Massive, half of the bass tracks are Scott Shiflett.
There you go.
And here's the reason why. Was our bass player, Bean, or Matt Hernandez, at the time, was a great bass player, came with great bass lines, really tasteful bass player, but was a finger player, right? And never played with a pick. And our producer, Steve Kravac, who did records like, Life in General by MXPX.
Yeah, MXPX, yeah.
We recorded at West Beach in Hollywood, where a ton of great records were made. Like, just look up on All Music or something, and it's mind blowing. The punk rock in the '90s that was made there.
Yeah.
But Steve Kravac brings in Scott Shiflett to play like I think it was like five or six songs of the 12 that needed a pick on a PA.
Yeah, he had picked bass playing. Yeah.
Yep. And so I tell this to Scott in Japan, and he's like, "Oh my gosh!" And you can tell he's kind of racking his brain. He's like, "Dude, I remember that." He's like, was it? Because I didn't tell him the studio yet. He's like, was that at West Beach? I'm like, sure was. I guess he had kind of mentioned to Trevor or whatever. And then me and Trevor got in touch and then ended up, kind of becoming buddies. And to the point where just late last summer, he did an acoustic show here in Nashville. He did four acoustic shows within a matter of a few weeks. And he asked me to play with him. So I played like second guitar on a few songs and then mainly played lap steel with him, which is really fun.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I met Scott just once and maybe twice actually, both times with me first in the Gimme Gimmes. That was back in the day that I was kind of friends with Fat Mike from NoFX and me first. Sherwood played Punk Spring 1 year in 2008 and me first was on that show. But I found out that that's the only time that Chris Shiflett from Foo Fighters would tour with me first in the Gimme Gimmes is when they went overseas. So he was there and not Scott. Scott didn't get to go to Japan, which is a bummer. But so these Face to Face songs, like at this time in my life, when I'm trying to write melodic punk rock, they were approachable. They felt like they do feel like the kind of thing that any kid with enough like pluck could maybe figure out with just enough, a little bit of talent, a little bit of luck. And isn't that, don't you think that's kind of the allure of punk in general?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's, Oh, well, I'll tell you this. It's the reason that it's on my water bottle a million times. It's the reason the Clash realized they could do this too, was they heard the Ramones and were like, we can do that. And I didn't get into punk rock till I was in high school. And at that point I've been playing guitar for 5 or 6 years. So like, I already learned power chords by learning like 80s metal songs and then actual metal songs with Metallica or Megadeth or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things that's like, oh yeah, I can just learn power chords and I can just play my guitar super hard and write lyrics. And, there's a simplicity to it. But I think there's also like, I don't know how you would describe it. There is a sophistication to the way Trevor writes. Because it's not just like, my mom and dad suck. Get me out of the house.
Certainly
like,
not lyrically. No, there's more going on. Yeah.
Way more going on. And I don't know. I've always had this observation that especially in growing up in the 90s in high school was, I feel like they were always one of the most badass punk rock bands that I had seen live. And I just feel like all these other bands just like really took off, especially by the late 90s. And I don't know if it had to do with Ignorance is Bliss. I don't know if it had to do with it. You had bands like Blink that were writing songs about, masturbation and whatever.
That was certainly the moment. It was a juvenile moment in
very juvenile
punk rock. Yeah.
I just felt like there was this maturity to Face to Face in Trevor's writing always.
I agree.
that in a way set them apart from everybody else. I feel like they don't get lumped in with pop punk as much as a band like Blink or Sum 41 or MXPX or whoever.
Right.
There was just,
it's sincere. That's a word that I think separates Face to Face from some of those other bands. And I think just, even thinking about like was it Woodstock 99, right? That was the crazy year where it all turned to shit and they made the
that's where it really
documentary
went to shit,
about it. Right. That's the year the Enema of the State came out. So obviously like the Limp Bizkit moment is different than the pop punk moment, but the kind of, it's the height of almost like Stuff magazine culture, in kind of male American culture. It's very lowest common denominator. Now I love Blink. Like I love them, but I love them as song crafters. I don't love them as lyricists,
I love them as comedians.
yeah. They're funny and they are great pop songwriters, but they're not
under. Yeah. And I think as a whole package, a band like Blink, like it all works. Right. I think
Travis made it complete.
Of course. He absolutely did. Yeah. I mean, I think with their old drummer, if they would have done the same exact songs on Enema, it just wouldn't have had the same flavor and feel.
That's right.
But I don't know. Face to Face was just a band that I think I just respected more than a lot of the pop punk I was hearing. Cause I've never really been a massive pop punk fan. I think I'm more like you, and I don't know if I even really recognized this when I was younger, but I just like good songs. So it does not matter what genre it is. This is why like I'm not a metalhead, but I was a co-host of a Metallica podcast for almost seven years.
That's
right?
A long time,
but,
dude.
It is, but I wouldn't call myself a metalhead, like, because I'm not super deep with a lot of metal, because a lot of it I don't hear like good songs. Like I do love some good screamy stuff or growly stuff. Like, let's take Slayer, for example. Tom Araya doesn't really sing melodies, but he screams his ass off. But after like a record, I just get like ear fatigue, but I can listen to a really, really well-crafted song over and over again. So like when, Reactionary came out, for example, dude, this has been an era when you got excited about a CD and you had a CD player in your car.
Yeah.
And you had to be out all day in your car for whatever reason, working, running errands, doing whatever. It ended and you just let it go back to the beginning and just keep listening to it. And then you find like the song, you're like, oh dude, that's the one. That's my favorite one on this record or whatever. But, but you could have had everything is easily one of my favorites on this record. I love that it's not like a fast, pop punk song, with like a super fast drum beat. It's just halftime the whole time, but it's still aggressive and powerful. And it 100%. never lets up the whole song. And like you said, they get to the chorus at like 28 seconds.
No, they get to the chorus at 14 seconds and verse two at 28 seconds.
That's true.
Let's hear the next verse and chorus. And this will be a way for me to say like what my favorite thing about the song now, I wouldn't have been able to put words to it then when I was, 16, 17 when this came out, I would have just thought, this is fast, catchy, I love it. Now, what I know that I love about it is specifically Scott's walking bass line in the second half of the chorus. Mm-hmm. And a walking bass line, sometimes there's not much to that, but this one is, in my opinion, so clever and so prominent as to almost count as a counter melody.
Yeah.
And I am a sucker for a good counter melody. That's like, that is like straight to the heart, like Dancing Queen by ABBA, you know, stuff like that. Like a perfect counter melody is like just the best element in music I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play that. And if you want, you can kind of listen with that in mind. Into the guitar solo at 58 seconds. It's unbelievable.
That's why I was like getting close to my camera, and I was like, have we even hit a minute yet?
No. We were at the guitar solo bridge before 1 minute.
Good job, Trevor. Love
Fantastic.
It.
Well, maybe we could, the interesting thing about doing these songs about different points in my life, this song meant a lot to me at a point in my life when my knowledge of and ability to write music was very nascent, you know, and I can come back now and I can say a little bit more about that bass line and stuff. But you know, other songs from later periods of my life, there's going to be more to talk about. This one's fairly straightforward, but yeah. I thought it might be cool to like, let's play a couple other Face to Face songs that we love and just kind of celebrate that band before wrapping up, you know, this kind of shorter episode. So let's start with you. Like, what do you have, like a favorite era, favorite record, favorite song?
Dude, well, I mean, my favorite, I kind of wonder if my favorite record is Ignorance is Bliss, but I do want you to play something. Maybe there's people out there listening that maybe they fell off during Ignorance is Bliss, or maybe they fell off after the band broke up before they got back together, because they've done multiple records since then,
right?
Which, by the way, kick ass.
Some of them are, there's some really cool stuff, yeah.
And there's another departure record. Was it Three Chords and a...
The Half Truth and the Truth.
The Half Truth, yeah. But I would like you to play something off of... Protection, this record. Dude, just play track one.
This record is rad. Okay.
What, Three Chords and the Half Truth?
No, Protection. Protection, record's cool. 2016, and it's like they never took a break.
Dude, it really sounds... To me, this sounds like this could have been a follow-up to Self-Titled.
Wow. Okay, here's track one.
Yeah, Bent But Not Broken.
Why are we still so surprised every time we buy the lie? Whoa. Why don't we pursue the truth even when it's hard to do? Whoa. And all we want is to believe. It's okay. Maybe we're missing the point that we're listening to liars and things. Whoa, and but you just won't break. Whoa, some things will never change.
I'd like to stick with this record for a second. I really like two other songs on it. And you can pick which one we hear, but I love Double Crossed and I love See If I Care. Any preference between those two?
See If I Care is, I mean, they're both awesome. This whole record's great, but put on See If I Care. That's a great one.
Okay. Right.
There's nothing left to do here but clean up this mess. I let myself down for the I've got nothing left for you.
That's a great pre-chorus.
I can't
too.
Believe that came out in 2016. That is just like it. I think it's kind of under discussed how difficult it is for bands, especially who write music in like a youth culture genre, like punk rock.
Yeah.
To accomplish something similar when they are older. And and like now that I'm 40, I fucking get it. You know, like
wait till 45.
Yeah. Okay. Wait till exactly. But like, you know, like you don't have the same access to whatever it is. Like you can do it convincingly, but it's hard to find the fire.
Yes.
And when a record comes out like that with like many songs that totally accomplish like the best of what that band does. Mm-hmm. You know, literally, what is that, 25 years after they started or something like that?
Yeah, totally, years, man.
Something like that. Like, that is like, that's worth celebrating.
And like I was saying earlier, this could have been a follow-up to Self-Titled or even Reactionary. I guess what I'm saying is you could have thrown this into the first era of Face to Face before their breakup. I think 2003, I believe, after, you know, because they did
had it in there. Yeah.
Absolutely could. And I think another thing I was thinking of when we were listening to that last song was, I think what really attached me or attracted me to Face to Face was that they were like, quote unquote, a pop punk band, but Trevor didn't have a high voice. He didn't sing like nasally. It was almost like, you know, and I'm not saying he sounds like Mike Ness, but it was like he doesn't sound like anybody else to me.
Well, it's more on the gruff side. And I do think that's what made them great. It's what still makes them great is his naturally gruff voice with sincere and interesting lyrics, but singing essentially pretty straightforward, catchy melodies over emotionally resonant, energetic pop music.
Yeah.
And I think that's always been a sweet spot in pop music, like the gruff vocalist with the like ear candy, you know, like fucking Kurt Cobain. I mean that, like you think of any number of examples of that, of like, that is kind of the sweet spot, especially for heavier music. Yeah. Right. But it's like, I'm drawn to that sincerity, and his voice is like, oh, you could be in the heaviest band you want to be in, dude, and you'll fit in. Like, you know, your voice would fit in singing for as heavy as you want to go. And whenever those guys are willing to do something a bit more vulnerable, a bit more saccharine, like they get away with it. They pull it off and then when you look at Trevor Keith, he's like a solidly built, tattooed, like man's man. And it's like, yes, I believe you. Open up your heart and help us all learn to identify our feelings. You know what I mean? Like, totally. We trust you to help us do that. All of us dudes, you know, in NoFX t-shirts.
Right. Exactly. I don't know, man. There was just always something this set them apart from the rest of what was going on in punk rock in the 90s to me. You know, like I listen to NoFX. Awesome band, right? But I would just always go back to Face to Face because they just didn't. Nobody else sounded like them, and no one else sounded like Trevor. Like, I can't think of it any other singers that sound like him. Whereas the rest of, not all of it, obviously, I'm not trying to dog anybody, but like a huge chunk of pop punk in the 90s and early 2000s had that kind of nasally, kind of, you know what I'm talking about?
Top of your range, nasal vocals, Tom DeLonge, etc.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, even, you know, Fat Mike has it, you know, and it's just, and to me, it's just like, it was like, oh man, like hearing Face to Face was like, oh hell yeah. Like musically, it's still in that world, but it's a little more aggressive. I mean, you can like really hear them hitting the guitars hard. And I've always loved that, like Ramones style. And then Trevor's voice was just like, not anything like any of those other like punk rock bands in the 90s. And I was just like, oh, this is cool. You know, or I should say the pop punk bands. But yeah, man, I'm glad when you sent me a list of songs to choose from, there was a Face to Face song on there. And I saw that, although I thought it would have been hilarious for me to do a Reliant K song. So how did the drums impact you?
I think it was. I did pick a song from the record that you were on. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But no, I was excited to talk about you know,
yeah,
face to face in general, but specifically this song from this record.
Well, I think that what we should do to kind of close out here is, since we've both mentioned that the self-titled from 96 is our, well, it's probably still my favorite record. Maybe it fights with Ignorance is Bliss, I would say, depending on the day. And since we don't have access to Ignorance is Bliss on Spotify right now, why don't we each pick a song from the self-titled, and we'll celebrate those before we close out.
You like it? So do you
verse, do you have an obvious one?
I am always going to choose Blind.
Okay.
I pulled up the track list and just to make sure there wasn't another one that.
Let's do Blind, and then I'll figure out which one I want to do, and then we'll say farewell. So here's Blind, track 3 from self-titled 1996 Face to Face.
What if I'm right and you wrong? What if you knew it all along? What if I figured out that I did not belong? What if it always bothered me? What if I never did believe? Would it be wrong if I decided I should leave? If I pretended I was fine, struck it from my mind, would it still be there? What if I do anything to make it seem all right? It's all right.
Okay, and for mine, you know, I was tempted to go I Won't Lie Down. That is their second most popular song on Spotify. Mm-hmm. So if people know Face to Face, they've probably heard I Won't Lie Down. So I'm going to try and go another deep cut. This is definitely more of an album track, less popular. And I would argue maybe starting to show a little bit of what was interesting them at this time that led into Ignorance is Bliss. That's going to be my little musicology argument. And this is a track called Take It Back. Just a little bit less known, but a little more emo. Great chorus, I think. Here it is. That is veering almost into emo territory, I think, at that time, right? Like,
it's getting there for sure.
It's getting there.
Yeah,
which and you know, I'm no surprise that it works for me.
I would even add, and I know we got to wrap this up because you said 30 minutes, but there's no way I can talk about a band that's cool.
I said 30, I was planning to kind of do the intro separately, so I really meant more like 40. We're at 45-ish. That's fine.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, speaking of Ignorance is Bliss, there's so many heavy parts in that record, like that. Yeah. It make me shocked that some of their punk rock fans weren't like, well, I do like those two songs or whatever, right? I would encourage anyone to go back and listen to that record because there's a lot of cool stuff on there. I just think it's one of Trevor's many peaks as a songwriter.
Tell you what, I will track down a song, get a recording of it, and I will put it in. So the listeners of the podcast version, this is hopefully going to also be on YouTube. You guys won't hear it, but podcast listeners will hear a song. I have a strong inclination of what I'd like to hear, which is Prodigal. Disagreement from you, but if you have something else you'd rather hear.
I don't object at all, man. You could play any song from that record, and I'd be stoked. God is a man.
Thing you wanted to make sure was like getting a little bit of Ignorance is Bliss love in here, or
I just think we've talked about it enough. Is like,
yeah, we gotta hear it.
You know, I mean, and it'd be good if anyone listening has not really, let's say they haven't heard Face to Face at all, hear what they did as a departure record, and then going back into, you know, the Return to Form record. This would be a nice little cap, I think.
I think that's great. Okay, well then that's where we're going to end it. But Ethan, if people want to kind of connect with you in any way, where would you send them?
I have a Yahoo chat room that I talk to. go to mp3.com.
My Pure Volume page is actually where I kind of do most of my interaction. Pure Volume.
That was a good site. I'm on all the social stuff. It's usually just under my name, Ethan Luck, at Ethan Luck. I'm on most things. I'm not on TikTok. How about that?
Yeah, that's probably better for
I'm 45 years old. Why do we need to sign up for TikTok, dude? It's like
I'm with you. Okay, then playing us out, possibly both of our favorite Facebook, but that was the thing. Like, the reason I didn't pick Ignorance is Bliss, I don't think I said this earlier, is that when that came out in 1998, 2 years before Reactionary, I'm 14, 15 years old. I can't conceive of writing anything like what they're doing there. Mm-hmm. That was, totally, at that time, a decade beyond me, kind of a thing. And then they go back to their sound. I'm 2 years older. Now, all of a sudden, the gears are closer, and I kind of know what MXPX is doing. Face to Face was a bit more approachable, you know, not as fast, not as technical in a lot of ways.
Right.
And some of those bold primary colors really worked for me. But this record is, you know, Ignorance is Bliss has just grown so much in my estimation, and so it's an honor and a privilege to have Prodigal play us out here on Pretty Good Vibrations. Thanks so much, Ethan Luck.
Thanks for having me.
You have it in your head.